Well, I'm not funny like he is. I'm Doreen. I'm alcoholic. It's really an honor and a pleasure to be here. And thank you, Mark, for asking me to come and share. I'm going to qualify back to my childhood, but I'll make it, you know, kind of quick. I have two, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. The first one, my sobriety date is April 1st, 2023. My current sobriety date. My original sobriety date was September 23rd, 1988. I got sober when I was 29, the first time. And I stayed sober for 28 years. I grew up in a very right-wing Christian church. From the time I was able to, you know, when I came out the womb, I was on my knees in church. So, and I say that with, you know, a little sarcasm because my mom kept me, there were three sets of sisters on my short block, my age, and I couldn't play with them because none of their families went to church. So talk about feeling different from the gate. I felt different. And I resented it. So when I got old enough, I used to go to Karen and Kathy's house. They were twins. They lived three houses down. And I used to change my clothes and wear something of theirs to, you know, fit in. And that's after we became friends. Because in third grade, I would walk home from school by myself. I wasn't allowed, right? And they would, the six of them, step on my heels, step off my shoes, pull my hair, and I came home crying. My dad said, Doreen, if you come home one more day crying, I'm going to give you something to cry about, because that's what they said back then. And I cried. I said, there's six of them, and what am I supposed to do? He said, I don't care what you do. Put something in that red purse that you carry and haul off and smack one of them with it. I put a wrench, a screwdriver, and I wanted to put a hammer. It wouldn't fit. And so, you know, they started their stuff the next day, and I did exactly what he said. I turned around and whoever I hit, I was going to hit. And I hit the girl who ended up being the maid of honor in my wedding in 1983. And I learned in the third grade that I could fight. I didn't know before that. And I fought my way into those six girls. That's what it took. And then I didn't care what my mom said. I got a certain age. Wasn't in the third grade, but was more along in fourth or fifth. I was putting Sizzlers on to go to school. Remember Sizzlers?
Yes.
And so, you know, my parents got divorced when I was 12. Or almost 12. And it pretty much devastated me. I ran away from home. I did some stupid stuff. And I lost my train of thought. Oh, here's the church thing. My dad bought pews. He didn't go to church, but my mom did. Tithed 10% of his income. There was only one income. Bought pews in the church. She was of service in the church. She taught Sunday school. She did vacation Bible school. She did whatever it was. She sang in the choir. And when they found out my mom and dad were getting divorced, they turned their back on her. And I was old enough to see it, to feel it, and to hate it. So I didn't go to church until I got sober for a while, from 12 to maybe 37 or 38. But I had a problem when it came to step three, when I got sober and got in program. I'm jumping all the way ahead of my qualifying, so let me back up a little bit. So I graduated high school, did a lot of drugs through high school to escape, and After I graduated high school, I didn't do any. I just drank. And I drank alcoholically from the gate. My first beer was probably at 13. Don't remember for sure, 13 or 14. And I was with a group of kids, and these parents across the street, two of the sisters, their parents went to play bunco or bing, some kind of card game every Thursday night, so that was the party place. And so my first beer was a hole in the bottom and pull the tab. Shotgun. Just open your throat. Right? And I went, I got about half the beer in me, and I went, I said, open one for me to drink it regular. So I liked it from the very beginning, and continued to drink through high school. But after high school, none of the drugs, nada. I just drank. And, you know, I liked shots. There was a place on Tuesday night after we put the paper to bed. I worked at a newspaper when I graduated. After we put the paper to bed to press, there was a place called the Why Not Lounge. Now, this is in Detroit, where I'm from. The Why Not Lounge in Detroit, shots of schnapps for a quarter. I was always looking out for that kind of bar. I was a bar drinker. And so what happened was I was engaged when I graduated, and I decided I didn't want to get married right out of high school. And he was an all-or-nothing kind of guy, so he said, give me back the ring. I said, okay, there you go. And about a year later, we got back in touch. He won real big in Vegas when he went with his parents and moved to California. And so he got in touch with me and said, you should come out for a vacation. I want to come to California. I've never been here. So that turned into moving out here and living together until 1983 when I got married. I graduated in 77, moved out here in 1980. I was 20 years old. I'm 66 now. And anyway, we were together. We lived together for the next 3 years. And he was a daily weed smoker. And, you know, he just did it like I smoked cigarettes. And he had a good job. And I struggled a little bit at first, but then I started getting good jobs. I've had 5 careers in my 66 years. And so I used to... The job I got in a publishing company, you know, they kept alcohol in the refrigerator back then. And when we got one of the magazines, it was a magazine publisher, and when we got one of the magazines, we did 12 a month. So, you know, there were party nights 12 times a month at the office. And there was a little bar across the street. And pretty soon he had to come looking for me. I wasn't coming home. And then we went to San Pedro one night with some of his friends, and I found the drug of all drugs for me that set me up to be able to drink more. And back then it was like the real deal. And so that was in 1983 when I found the big C. This is the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'm going to keep my sharing on alcohol, but just know that was a huge part of my 5-year stint of drugs and alcohol. Because the cocaine started in 83 and I got sober in 88 by the grace of God. During that time, we got married in 1983. I found the drug in 1983 so I could drink more than I was already drinking. And that Christmas, we got married in September. That Christmas, 4 months, October, November, December, 3 months later, I was on a pool league. I told you I was a bar drinker. I was on a bowling league, a pool league, and all of this was without him. And I kind of got a crush on this guy. He always had dope. And I came home one night at it was Christmas, and his parents were out here from Michigan, and his grandmother. And I went out and stayed out until 5 o'clock in the morning. I called him from Vaughn's parking lot, and I'm living in L.A. I called him from Vaughn's parking lot and said, Steve, I'm scared to come home. And he said, well, you know, I'll come over there and meet you. So it was just around the corner, this payphone, because I don't even know if I had a cell phone then. It was a payphone. And he did. And that's the first time it ever came out of my mouth. His mom kind of took me in a room by myself, and I said, you know, I think I have a problem with alcohol. The first time I ever said it. And it was Christmas of 1983. And when I pulled into the driveway when I got home, all of my stuff, out the closet, out the bathroom, out of everywhere, was in a big pile in the driveway at 5 o'clock in the morning. The pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization started then. Besides him having to come look for me when I was drinking in the bar. But within 3 months, I was moved out, had an apartment for show, because I was living with the dope man. And I got introduced to, you know, and the next 5 years were miracle that I didn't go to jail. Miracle that I, you know, I mean, he was a, you know, dealer. not little stuff, but I drank everything that was in his bar, even the expensive stuff. And that lasted for, you know, almost 5 years. Mind you, it wasn't a free ride after the first year. But, you know, the people who would come over and buy things from him, I knew them. So for $20, they just, like, whatever I wanted, pretty much. And I continued to drink in the bar. I had a long neck bud and a vial in my pocket and a pool cue. And that's how I rolled. I had a really good job after that publishing company. I worked for TRW Space and Defense. And I worked my way into a top secret clearance and a supervisor position. Even though I went to work the same way, only it wasn't a long neck bud in my hand, it was a pint of vodka or a pint of tequila in my purse and a file in my pocket and a keyboard. So I worked there for like 9 years. That's where I worked when I got sober. So what happened was I tried to stop for probably 2 years. I knew it was a problem, and I tried to stop. Couldn't. And my parents told me, both my mom and my dad told me, that if you can do anything, it was drilled, you put your mind to, Doreen. And for my whole life, that's been true, except I couldn't stop drinking and using. I could become a supervisor. I could get a job. I could do what I could, you know, whatever it was, and be pretty successful. But I couldn't stop that, and it was making me crazy. And I wanted to die. Well, I called TWA. That was when TWA was an airline. I had a TWA credit card for emergencies because all my family's back in East, in the Midwest. So I would call them. I swear the midnight reservationist knew my name. It's that Doreen girl calling again to fly to Michigan. Always call, always call. I mean, like once a week, I was calling them, trying to make a reservation to fly home. And when I finally did, I didn't call TWA, I called my dad. And I said, Dad, I need to come home. What's the matter? You know, he was afraid I was getting beat in a domestic violence situation. I said, no, 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 it's nothing like that. It's just, it's all me. And then I proceeded to go without permission from my job. Mind you, top secret clearance. I worked in a locked area, and there were two doors to go through, two spin dial doors. One closed, you were in the little area, and then you open the other one and go in. I was one of two people who had the spin dial. And I was going to the airport. I woke him up. He was in that room. I slept in that room, the dope man, that my boyfriend, wasn't my boyfriend anymore. But I was going to the airport. I didn't have any money, so I woke him up and I said, I don't have any money. He gave me $35. I put a couple of pairs of jeans, a pair of underwear. I was going to LAX. And I don't know if anybody knows that area very well, but I was driving down Aviation. And just before you get to Imperial Highway, Wild Goose used to be on the right. And I was coming up to that intersection, and a cop car came, pulled from Imperial, going the opposite direction on Aviation. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I was driving a gold 77 Monte Carlo. The windows were down because I was wasted. And I had, my face was all messed up. I had been crying. And next thing I know, they're behind me. And their lights are flashing, and I'm like, fuck. Oops. I pulled over, but that's how it was, but I was just like, I was struck sober, and I pulled over, and they shined the white light up there, and come driving up next to me. Well, first they said, let me see your hands. Put my hands out the window, and they must have been looking for a man, because they drove up next to me and said, sorry, ma'am, thought you were somebody else. God. That was nothing. I got chills. That's nothing but God. Anyway, I have enough upbringing and consciousness of God to know that, you know, that might be a sign. Keep going. When I got to the airport, here's the next God shot. I was a mess, like I said. I parked my car, and I'm walking on the sidewalk. This is 3:30 in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning. And there was a guy walking with the LAX badge on the sidewalk. And he said, he walked, you know, kind of kept his distance from me. He said, are you okay? I was like, no, I'm not okay. I'm really not. I started crying. He said, well, ma'am, the ticket counters don't open until 7 o'clock. And I lost it. I just started sobbing. I said, if I don't go now, I might never go. I have to go home. He said, that's okay. That's okay. He pulled me into him, hugged me, and started praying in my ear like I'd only heard my mother pray. And still kind of get emotional about that because that man saved my life that night. And so he took me to Denny's across the street. From LAX, we went in my car, and he brought in the word, he brought in his Bible, and my little $35 paid for our breakfast, and he stood in line with me until I got on that plane at TWA ticket counter, and I got to St. Louis, changed planes to St. Louis, and I had to call my boss at Space and Defense, and she said, Doreen, I'm going to have to call Vicky, was her name, off of vacation to come and open, you know, the spin dials. Leroy is going to fire you. I know he is. And I told her that I had a problem with alcohol. I didn't tell her everything. But she said, I knew there was something, Doreen. I knew there was something because you could be 150%, man. And then it was like, nothing. Where'd you go? So she saved my job. She saved my job for me. It was like before, I don't know if they sent people to recovery or treatment centers then. They probably did in 1988. But I went on home and I proceeded to get sober on my dad's couch for 4 days. And when I came back, I still had a job. Always been with me. Always, always, always. And so I continued to work. Well, first of all, when I got here, I was afraid I'd relapse because I was going back into that same house where all the stuff was, where there was. And so I made an appointment. When I separated from my husband in 1984, I kept the card for the counselor we went to see. And I still had it. I called her up. She was the first one I was completely honest with. I went to see her the day after I flew in, and she called the hotline for me. And I found out where a meeting was the next night, and the guy on the hotline said, if you raise your hand as a newcomer, I'll come and talk to you at the break. And he did. I went, he came, he talked to me. And I sat in that first meeting on my hands, not really looking around too much in the meeting, but what I got from that first meeting was that I wasn't alone. I thought nobody could possibly have gone through what I was going through, beating myself up every day because I couldn't stop, went on and on and on. And so these people in this room had the same issue, and I was they're my people. I didn't think about it like that at the time, but that's where I am. I'm right here with you guys. You're my people. And so I started going to meetings. I got a sponsor. And at that time in the South Bay, in this program, there were only 7 meetings a week. And we, went all together. Monday night we were here, Tuesday night we were there, and that was really good for me. I met a man when I was 30 days sober. Yes, I did get in that relationship. Yep, and he was 30 days sober, which was real fun. But we did pretty well for about 5 years. I married him 2 years into it, only to find out 20 years later, which was 20 years ago, that he was autistic. On the high end of the spectrum. I mean, he put airplane engines together and took them apart like nobody's business. He did 11 years in the Air Force. Anyway, we were together for 5 years, and we went to those meetings together. You know, I became his higher power. However, I remember when my sponsor said to me, you need to go to Codependence Anonymous, Doreen, or you're going to die or drink. I was real sick with it. And so that, you know, I did that. I did both programs for probably 3 years. And so when we, the step that I had the problem with, guess which one it was? Number 3. I had no problem knowing my innermost self that I could not stop. I was powerless. That was given. But how can I turn my will? So I'm at this retreat. I'm 9 months sober. And no, I wasn't. September, October, November, December, January, 4 months. Third step. And I'm sitting on the couch in this beautiful room with a big fireplace. And I was like, ah, great place to do my 4 step. So I write down my stepdad and Bank of America on the list. Oh, everybody's going on a hike. No, I'm not going to go. I'm going to work. John says, what are you doing, Doreen? I said, I'm going to work on my 4 step. He said, oh, okay, good for you. And they all went on a hike, and 2 hours later, they came back, and he checked in, walked by the couch, and he said, I had the paper there on my lap, and he said, what? Same 2 things. I didn't have any resentment. I had the Bank of America and my stepfather still on the paper hours later. And he said, sat down on the couch and he said, well, have you done your 3rd step? And I said, yeah. I said, you know, we prayed, me and my sponsor, we prayed and, you know, turning my will and my life over. And he said, well, let me ask you, tell me about your God. Here it comes. And we had a conversation, by the end of which my veins were sticking out of my throat. And I was saying, how am I going to turn my will and my life over to something that's going to damn me and send me to hell if I'm not perfect? He said, oh, you haven't done your 3rd step. I was like, okay, help me figure this out. Your sponsor will work with you. So what I did is I got to write down, like probably many of us do, all the attributes, all the characteristics that I wanted my God to have. But it took a while. It took another 5 months before I believed that I could maybe trust that it would be all right and embrace this new idea of a power greater than myself. And not long after that, I could do a four-step. And the only regret I have about that particular time is we burned it. I would never do that again. I would never advise anybody to do that, and I've never done it since because a lot of information comes from that four-step. And so what happened, I'm going to move forward a little bit to my second sobriety and my relapse in 2016. So I sponsored a lot of women. I went, did book studies at my house. Christopher and I did them. And it was just like, I said, this last place that I worked for the state of California, EDD unemployment for 17 years. It was the fifth career and the one I, praise God, retired from because I have that lovely pension. And so in 2015, I met this guy. I hadn't been married or in relationships really, and I met this guy. It had been 7 years since I had even dated anybody, and I didn't know he was married until about 3 months into it. And you know, I stepped away 4 years before I relapsed, so that would be like in 2012. I stepped away from meetings. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have any sponsees. The book was on the shelf. And for 4 years, I was graced with white-knuckling it. But it didn't feel like that until I got in that relationship in 2015. I drank in 2016. And he was an alcoholic. And for a while, I thought, I could go to the bar with him at happy hour and have a Pellegrino and lime. And it worked for a little while, almost a year. But then in October 2016, we were fighting. He would kind of get in this want to pick a fight, you know, coming home from the casino, lost some money, drunk, want to pick a fight. And I finally, I did some damage to my legs with, you know, some little scissors and some tweezers before I ever took a drink. I was miserable, and I had no way to process, and I didn't have the tools anymore. I wasn't using the tools anymore. So that was going on, and my son, who is 32, who I met when he was 2 months old, had cancer. He got osteosarcoma in his knee. Big old, didn't know when he went into surgery whether he was going to come out with his leg or not. And then he started a round of chemo. Well, this chemo started before the surgery, but when he was doing the chemo, after the first round, we went to the doctor, and I lost him somewhere there. Long story short, him and his girlfriend and his chemo doctor came walking out. I was upset. I didn't know where'd they go? Where's my son? And his doctor said, when I asked, how did it go? Well, I can't talk to you about it. He took you off his confidentiality agreement. And me and him are like this. I was devastated. I ran out of that hospital like my hair was on fire. And I was going to end it. The boyfriend cutting my legs, doing all this. I was just crazy. And a friend who knew I was sober poured me a shot of brandy. Instead of going home and taking the rugs, the white rugs, out of the bathroom to, and I threw that shot of brandy back, and it was on and popping. I went next door to 7-Eleven and got myself a six-pack, which is my drink of choice, was beer, because I get way too drunk and way too crazy on hard alcohol, and I just like to keep drinking, so I can do that with beer. And that started a six-year run of beer drinking. Didn't pick up the drugs, didn't, you know, go to bars. I drank at home. But it started with a 6-pack, and then it was a 12-pack, and then, you know, maybe I need a 24-pack for Friday and Saturday. And still worked my job, went through COVID drinking, worked at home, didn't drink too much during the day because I was a supervisor, and I had 14 people that reported to me, and I was working so many hours for unemployment that, I mean, like, the money was really good, which is why I was comfortable to retire with the salary that I'm getting now, because I was able to put that money away. But so the drinking never got in the way of my job, except at TRW when I flew off to get sober. So I thank God for that. So in 2016, from 2016 to 2023, I drank. I just drank beer. And I'm like, I'm not hurting anybody. I went to an old timer, Franny, and I said to her 3 or 4 months into it, I said, Franny, I don't know if I'm an alcoholic. Maybe it was just the drugs, you know, because I seemed to be able to control it. She said, well, keep controlling it. And, the control included taking a whole bottle of pills at one point during that, getting so drunk in Las Vegas that I was puking in the valet. I was throwing up out this side and peeing on my car seat at the same time. And when I got my car back from the valet, it had a big stack of towels on the seat. You know, pitiful and incomprehensible. But those things weren't revealed to me until I was about a year and a couple months sober this time. I forgot all about taking that whole bottle of pills. My song when I came back in 2023 was what the enemy wanted to say, what my disease would say is, it wasn't that bad. And then God started revealing those other things to me. Oh, yeah? It wasn't that bad. Why'd you take that whole pile of pills? Oh, yeah, it wasn't that bad. How come you were a complete fool in Las Vegas? If it wasn't that bad. So things got revealed, even the longer I stayed sober. And the bottom in 2023 was driving home on Cesar Chavez, March 31st, 2023, in a blackout from here to L.A. I drank all the way there. It was at 11 o'clock at night. That same guy that I was with for 3 years, back, who was the alcoholic, called me in 2021 and said, I bought a house in Bakersfield. I'm like, oh, I want to see it. And I came up here back and forth for a year. And then when I got sober in 2023, I was still seeing him, but I didn't see him for the first 4 months of my sobriety. I stayed in L.A. But I knew I wanted to move to Bakersfield when I retired because I already was familiar. But I was 6 months sober when I made the decision to move, and I knew I was moving there for me, not for him. I knew it wasn't going to last, and it didn't. And I was so glad in January of 2024 when he told me to get the fuck out of his house and not to come back because he was in a drunken state of mind, and I couldn't do it and be sober. So I'm really grateful for that. And, you know, a lot of things, and I worked the steps. 2 years sober on April 1st I was. And have worked those steps again. And, you know, I also approached that 4-step with, I don't have that much. I don't have that many resentments. I don't have, you know, I mean, I'm good. Once I put the pen to the... You feel like that? Put the pen to the paper anyway. Because what was revealed in the writing of that 4-step is a lot of things that... character defects, too, that I would not have claimed otherwise. I would not have claimed any of that. How am I controlling? How am I judging? I don't judge people. How am I thinking I'm better than? I know I'm not better than anybody else. I'm right here with you. But the things like that came out in that four step, and I had to, embrace it. It was shitty, but I had to embrace it. And, six and seven are a daily prayer. Because I can correct something over here, but then that same thing crops up over here in another situation. So it's just a constant morning, part of my morning prayer and meditation, is to remove anything that would prohibit me, would keep me from carrying the message and for doing God's work. Anything that would get in the way for that. My short prayer is knowledge of your will for me and the power to carry it out. And I'm... And that's what I'm doing. You know, I have five sponsees right now that, we're reading the book, doing this. The three of them haven't started the steps yet. They're in a recovery home that I support every Monday. I'm in that meeting. And it's recovery. It's not sober living. So they're doing work with their counselors anyway. But, being of service. They asked me to say a few words at my retirement party, right? I get to be of service for the rest of my life. That's what I said. And that's all I really said. And I'm grateful that I get to be of service for the rest of my life. And I'm not going to have to go get a part-time job at Walmart. Or I'm not going to have to, sweat. Those checks are going to come every month in the mail. And I'm going to be able to help some people. And that's exactly what I've done. And if it weren't for this program... The God that this program introduced me to, and the people, the fellowship, the women in the program. First meeting I went to in Bakersfield, I was like really nervous. But when I backed out of his, I had been going to Al-Anon after I moved up here. And when he told me to get out of his house January of 24, where's the closest AA meeting? Was what I asked Siri. And I went there, and there was a women's meeting the next night, and they told me about that one, too. And so I went to that. There were like 50 women in the room on Thursday night down there at the Alano Club. And like 20, at least 20 of them came up and introduced themselves to me and embraced me. And it was, I don't know what it would have been like if I had gone to. I mean, meetings are meetings, but that particular meeting really made me feel warm and welcome. I felt like I was already in the middle of the herd. What I want to do is be of service for the rest of my life. I take vacations now. I bought a camper in December, traded my car for something to pull that camper. She loves to be outside, Miss Diamond over there. So she's going to be my camping buddy. I've had the trailer at one time. And I'm going over Memorial Day for 7 days, and life is really, really good today. Prayer and meditation. When I first got her, I went 4 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and I was like, oh, I told somebody before the meeting, am I going to have to work my CODA program on my dog? And... Because it's a whole new experience for me. But for 4 days, no prayer and meditation. And I'm like on it every morning. I look forward to what's in the Word today. What's in the meditation? It's going to send me to the Word. Or, I cherish that time, especially because I don't have to punch a clock and go to work anymore. I could spend as much time as I want right there looking out at the roses on my patio. And, but I didn't do it. I was like, Friday night, I couldn't sit through the speaker meeting there. I had an anxiety attack. It was just like, oh. And then somebody, I hadn't done my prayer and meditation for a week. I'm like, oh, if that's what happens, I'm never going to miss it again. Not for 4 or 5 days in a row. I also thought I had lost her that day before the meeting, and that started the whole anxiety and panic. But, yeah. It's an important part of recovery. Finding a God of your own understanding, making an effort to, and praying for people. That prayer in the big book, about praying for people, you know, the sick man's prayer or the... I had to pray for my stepdad, and I had to write. I remember asking Diane, my first sponsor, how long am I going to have to write about this man? I mean, I got 10 years sober. It's like, needs to be done already. And I don't know, I was 15 years sober, I think, when someone in the meeting, it was a podium meeting like this at the Southwest Alano Club in Hawthorne, and she got up to the podium and she was sharing something, and it triggered. So I said, I'm going to go up. I went up to share, and I was going to say that old stuff, something about that old, and it was gone. It was gone. I had forgiven him, and I don't know when it happened. You know? So sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. It will always materialize if we work for it. Thanks for letting me share.